Welcome, Black Hollywood Live fans. On today's Fit Club, we talk social media misinformation, marijuana health concerns, and we are joined by Fit to Fat to Fit creator Drew Manning. Stay tuned for more.
You're tuned into Black Hollywood Live, Fit Club.
All right, we are back. We were away on a hiatus for 2 weeks, so it feels really, really good to be back. You guys are watching Fit Club. I am your host, Fallon Mercedes. You guys can find me online at fitwithfallon.com, along with my co-host,
Shaka Smith. You can find me at Shaka Strong on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat.
And we have my boss and creator of Fit to Fat to Fit, Mr. Drew Manning. He is Skyping in tonight. We appreciate you, Drew. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you for joining us.
Now, I say boss because, of course, I was on season one, but he is also a mentor, a friend, and just an all-around amazing guy. And I give you so much kudos for doing this. I did not realize what you did, even though I read your book, until I had to put myself through that experience. Just baffles me what you actually go through once you go through it. And as you guys can see, we have the pictures up. Wow, what a transformation you had done. How does it feel to be on the other side and actually kind of, you know, producing a show and seeing everybody else go through it?
You know, it's very surreal. I had no idea any of this would happen. I didn't know a book would come of this. I didn't know a TV show would come about. You know, I had no connections. I had no marketing strategy when I first did this 5 years ago. I just kind of set out to do it because I felt like I needed a better advantage as a trainer. I was lacking something. And for whatever reason, the idea of getting fat on purpose clicked in my mind. And it felt like something that I had to do. And then here we are today. And people like you, Fallon, are doing this now instead of me having to do this again.
It's incredible.
So, yeah. I commend you, Fallon, being a woman too, being a female, willing to put your body and your mind through this.
Yeah, so it was insane. But you know what? It was. I feel accomplished now looking back, and I'm so happy that I don't have to do it again. But you guys are filming season two, so we'll wait till later on in the interview for you to give us some exclusives, hopefully, on season two and what we can expect. But we are going to talk about, as we usually do on our show, different health and fitness topics, different reports, and Shaka is so great at always finding these great studies. So the first one we're going to chat about is basically social media experts. You can't always trust, but now reports are saying, can you even trust the doctors to back up health and fitness news? How do you feel about this, Shaka?
Well, I thought it was interesting because a lot of times we get all this misinformation on social media and then we refuse to, or we assume it's right, so we don't go and look it up further. I think this is probably the reason I do so much research, because I always want to find where it's coming from, you know? And so they found a couple of key topics, and one of them is BMI versus your waist circumference. And right now, I think we're all kind of tied into BMI as like this marker for obesity and unhealthiness, and they found that it's not as great a marker as we think it is.
Yeah.
And in fact, many people that are labeled obese are actually don't have the markers of people that are unhealthy, like cholesterol and your insulin sensitivity.
I know when I first became a trainer, I hated, you know, telling people what their BMIs were, because technically I'm obese. I'm only 5 feet, so I need to be like 95 pounds in order to look like, you know, I'm not obese. I was an athlete, so I have a lot of muscle mass. But, you know, talking about waist circumference, that's for me, I think it is a key indicator of being overweight, because that's all your visceral fat that's, you know, in the abdomen area. And Drew can really, you know, vouch for that, because his belly was just huge when he gained weight.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's actually a really interesting study. I've never been a big fan of the BMI as a marker, because people with, you know, large amounts of muscle mass too are considered obese or
obese
overweight.
Right now.
And how is that fair? How is that right? And how does that even determine if you're healthy, right? There's so much more to someone's health than their physical appearance, their weight, their relationship with gravity, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's so interesting because, BMI is one of those magic words. And we had another one. What is it? A calorie is always a calorie.
Yeah, and that's not true.
It's just not true.
Yeah.
And so the thing about calories is that it's about how much energy is in something and how much we're able to access.
Yeah.
So, for instance, 100 calories of almonds only has 76 accessible calories for human beings.
Yeah.
And so not everything's the same. Fructose and glucose. We're talking about two different types of sugars. So even though a calorie may be a calorie, it's going to affect you differently.
Yeah. I went through this when I was gaining the weight. I just was trying to, you know, eat as many calories, and the weight wasn't sticking on because I wasn't, I guess I was eating, I guess, healthier calories.
You're trying to do, like, responsible gaining weight.
So, Drew, did you have a hard time gaining the weight? Because you know I did. What do you think about this calorie myth, I guess we can call it?
No, I agree with Shaka. Like, you know, if you ate 1,000 calories of donuts, for example, you could probably lose weight, right? But that doesn't mean you're necessarily becoming healthier, right? Mm-hmm. So I agree with that 100%. But yeah, gaining the weight, for example, it's funny that you mentioned that, Fallon, because I know some of the trainers tried to do that too, where they were eating healthier food. Like, if I just eat X amount of calories, I'll gain X amount of weight. Mm-hmm. When in reality, there's so much more to it than that. It's not that black and white. And so, you know, the way we look at food, for example, our relationship with food is we think this food right here has this many calories, so this is going to cause me to gain weight. Or if I eat this salad, it has low calories, so it's going to cause me to lose weight. But what we don't realize is food is it's a mechanism, and it communicates with our body on a biological level. And so, you know, food affects us on a hormonal level, and we don't realize how it affects us on a deeper level than just, you know, calories in versus calories out.
And one of the suggestions that they made, which I want to hear what you guys think about this, is, you know, for a blueberry muffin, it takes about 30 minutes on the treadmill to burn that off. Mm-hmm. Should they just be putting that on the package? Should they just put, you know, blueberry muffin, this is what you need
instead
to
of
do.
Calories,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Just burn it off.
I think it would be way more motivating.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
I would be like, I don't have time for that. Yeah. I cannot. I don't have time to eat that muffin. It's not worth it.
Yeah, I've seen a funny meme around Halloween time where it lists each Halloween candy and how many burpees you need to do for each one to burn it off. Yeah. So, hey, that might motivate some people to not eat that food sometimes.
That's a deep motivation.
The study also showed that, you know, even the steps per day could be a fluke.
Yeah,
10,000 steps per day. But, you know, it's not really a necessary indicator that you will lose weight because, I mean, I'm looking at my Polar watch right now, and I've done quite a few steps, but you know, you can eat your way out of that.
That myth came from a pedometer. So apparently in 1965, a Japanese pedometer came out called the 10,000 step pedometer. That's where that whole myth of 10,000 steps a day is the magic number.
And I think it's also the intensity too, you know? I mean, if you've had a long day, you wore your watch from the beginning or your pedometer from the beginning till night, you know, you could just be doing your usual.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm an advocate of HIIT, high-intensity intervals. For me, that's what works for my body. So my steps alone, it really doesn't do much. It's the intensity. Yeah. What do you think about that, Drew?
Oh, sorry. I guess I'm the third host here. I guess I should chime in all the time. No, I agree with that 100%. And plus, I remember a study, not a scientific study, but these people too did a study where they both walked around the track with different brands of pedometers. And each single one of them, even though they're walking the same distance, came out with a different reading, a significant different reading.
That's
so
crazy.
It's not 100% accurate, first of all. And plus, I know people that can move their arm really fast, shake their arm up and down. They can wash their hair.
I've done that. I'm not going to lie. I would be really close to hitting my goal, and I would just, like, shake my arm just to get it out the way.
Yeah, so it's not 100% accurate, so I agree with that. But at the end of the day, you know, it is about movement and moving more. So I'm not going to totally hate on it and say you shouldn't have a pedometer or a Fitbit of any type, because I feel like it does keep people more accountable in that they're more aware of, okay, I need to hit X amount of steps per day.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to hate on it completely, because I do think there are some benefits to it, but there's we need to go a longer way to make this more accurate and more of a viable option for people to really lose weight and become healthier.
And I think in this instance where we're oversaturated with pseudo online fitness experts, yeah. and now, you know, can we even trust fully our physicians? And I don't blame them wholly necessarily because they're going to school to learn about medicine, not necessarily.
Well, they're trying to treat you rather than like.
Exactly.
Yeah, help you yeah. with prevention.
And, you know, and, yeah. pharmaceutical companies are backing them. So, yeah. you know, it's.
There's different motivations.
Exactly. Yeah. But what I do suggest and what this article suggested is, you know, when you are doing research online, really check the source that you're getting it from. I know, you know, they have the Google Scholars.
Yeah, they gave us four good, really good sources.
Yeah, Google Scholar is one of them. So it's like really, I guess, backed research.
Yeah.
It's not just somebody, you know, me going on my blog. And
yeah, that, yeah, but no, because you want to fact check the information. Yeah. They gave us the Cochrane Library and PubMed, P-U-B-M-E-D. Mm-hmm. And then obviously Wikipedia. Wikipedia is a good place, I think, to start. Sometimes they have links to different references.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a lot of times if there's something I want to know about, I'll type in that thing and then I'll write the word study afterwards. Because
mm-hmm.
I want to find out where it's backed up by a study, who did the study, how the study was conducted, before I go in and apply it to like my life, hoping it's going to make some change.
Yeah. And I know Drew, you have so many friends in the industry. I mean, you could just call Dr. Oz and he can give you the facts right there. But what other ways do you fact check or, you know, when you want to know what is the best diet, what workouts are, you know, really working right now?
Yeah, so first of all, you could go off the studies, and you know, I do have my, I guess, group of mentors, you could say, and Dr. Oz is not one of them. Just no, I can't just be like, hey, Oz, what about this? And at the end of the day, even doctors disagree on literature and science. You know, for example, they could dissect a study and say, look, this study wasn't done right. Even though it's a published study,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't mean that they all agree on the literature that's out there. And so at the end of the day, my opinion. In my personal opinion, is that we, the people, need to take the power into our own hands, and we need to become our own self-experimentations mm-hmm. to find out what is optimal for us, because we're being told from all these studies and all these doctors and quote-unquote, you know, social media experts saying this is what you're supposed to do, and we don't really know what's best for us until we try it out ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So so that's why we have to become our own self experimentations
yeah.
and find out what is optimal for us. And so I kind of have a different view on that. And that requires us to do more work mm-hmm. instead of just relying on my, you know, listening to whatever advice my doctor gives me.
Yeah. And I love that you actually practice what you preach, not only by getting fat and losing the weight, but I also listen to your podcast where you constantly talk about the ketogenic diet and, you know, you have been on this diet for a while now, so you can actually speak from experience. And there's other things that you've done on your podcast where you speak about your experience. So I love that, you know, if you personally out there listening don't want to try it, I'm pretty sure Drew has tried.
It's so true, and I just really think people need to see the value. There's value in becoming your own self-experimentation
yeah.
because that way you know what's optimal for you. So things you need to do are get your blood work done on a regular basis,
mm-hmm.
right, to see where you're at. And then some other markers like getting your body fat tested
mm-hmm.
and going off how your body feels instead of, okay, well, I heard this vegan thing is really good, but you know, I don't know if it's optimal for me, or this keto thing or this paleo thing. You need to give yourself a good, I think, 60 days consistent of consistently trying whatever it is you're trying to figure out if it works for you or not. And then documenting stuff, like documenting yeah. how you feel and your energy levels and getting your blood work done and getting your body fat tested on a regular basis to find out what is really optimal.
Yeah, and I always tell people take pictures too of, you know, because a lot of times we think we're not progressing. And but if you look back at a picture you took a day, the last week, then you can see it for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so important to just continually document what you do. Then yeah. you can attribute what's happening yeah. to your body.
That's funny because yeah. when I did the TV show, every single week the producers would make us take these photos. I'm like, nothing is changing. And then when you go back, you're like, oh, my God, I look so different. Crazy.
Yeah.
Insane.
And you changed a lot too, Fallon. You changed a lot.
Yeah, it was crazy. I think it's because I'm so short too. You could just yeah. notice every inch of fat, every expansion of every curve on my body. It was yeah. quite intense.
Well, I don't know what you did to lose the weight, but as you know, football is an excellent way to do it. We got a great message from DraftKings. So is football your passion?
It's not, but I hear you can win some money doing DraftKings.
Yes, you can. You know all the players and teams, their strengths and weaknesses. Now put that knowledge to the test and play for your shot at the $1 million top prize at DraftKings.com. It's just part of the $5 million in total prizes they're doling out in this week one contest. DraftKings.com is the destination for one-week fantasy football. One-week fantasy means no season-long commitments. Play whenever you want with the players you want. Just pick your contest, draft your players, and follow your team live. Renew old rivalries by challenging friends and family in a private league or to prove you're the superior GM. Or join an existing league and go head-to-head with friends, co-workers, and fantasy players from all across the country. Hurry to DraftKings.com now to choose your players, and you can seriously cash in. Use code BSPORTS and play for free with your first deposit. That's code BSPORTS to play free for your share of the $5 million in total prizes in this contest. Only at DraftKings.com, DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions may apply. See website for details.
Nice. Speaking of football, Drew, how often do you get the question if you're related to the Mannings?
Not that often because there's not a resemblance, but I do say, well, you know, those are my cousins, especially after they win the Super Bowl. After they win the Super Bowl, I'm like, oh yeah, Peyton, he's my cousin.
Yeah, that's my homie.
I taught him everything he knows.
Hilarious. All right, our second story today, which I love. Thank you, Shaka. Yeah. This was very, you know, informative. It's talking about how exercise doesn't just burn fat, but it can actually give you smart fat.
Yeah.
What is smart fat?
Well, yeah, this was interesting to me because I hadn't really heard too much about it. So it's like you have white fat, which is like the fat that wants to be stored and stay in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have brown fat, which helps you burn calories.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also linked to better insulin sensitivity and glucose tolerance. And so they found that when you exercise, so basically when you exercise, a protein's released.
Irisin.
Mm-hmm. And so irisin gives way to another protein that converts white fat cells into brown fat cells.
Mm-hmm.
So you're literally changing, you know, the type of fat you have to fat that's going to burn and work for you.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that when they soaked fat cells, human fat cells, in irisin, that there were less fat cells, 20 to 60% less fat cells in that human tissue.
Yeah, and not only that, the brown fat actually helped with, you know, when it got older, because there's young fat and old fat, but when that brown fat matured, it helped strengthen the bones.
Yeah.
And I found that interesting because I train so many women who their doctors will have them come to me because, you know, they have osteoporosis and they need to, you know, get stronger. And, you know, I know muscles help with giving you strength, but I didn't know brown fat could actually help with strengthening your bones.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Did you know about this, Drew?
Yeah, actually I did, and I think it's really interesting you guys brought this up, because a lot of people don't understand the difference between the two, and I kind of tell it to them like this. Like, babies are born with a lot of brown fat, and that's why they're always warm. They have this ability to, you know, provide heat for themselves, right? They're always burning so many calories. They're always warm. And as we grow older, right, that turns into white fat cells. And it starts to slow down our production of brown fat cells. But you can turn that back on by exercising.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also some studies showing that by taking cold showers or jumping in cold water can activate more brown fat cells in your body to turn on and you know, rev that up. And so I recommend to people, I mean, not that you're going to become skinny by taking cold showers, but that's another hack you can add into your life as well.
That's funny. That's one of the things I've done. Yeah.
Yeah. If I skip the gym tonight, I'm going to go take a cold shower instead.
There you go.
All right. Another story. Scientists have finally agreed on what the best diet is.
Yeah.
Is there really the best diet?
I like this because, you know, I saw the article and I was like, oh, I can't wait to read this.
Yeah.
The best diet. What
right.
is it? But it turns out they looked at all these different studies, all these different diets, and the best diet is the one you can stick to. It turns out that they looked over time at all these different diets. It didn't matter what diet you were on. The people lost around the same amount of weight as long as they stuck to the diet.
Yeah. And there's a couple questions you should ask yourself when you are about to embark on a new diet. One, can you stick with it? Two, is it healthy?
Yeah.
You know, I've heard so many, like for me, the Master Cleanse diet, I just die on that diet. I could not last more than like 2 days.
Yeah,
any
diet that's got like a time limitation, you want to look a little bit closer at its healthy effects.
3, it's all about the small changes. So you don't want to do an overly drastic diet because it's too much.
You'll go back to the way you ate before if you can't actually do it overnight. Yeah.
And also, it's based on skills.
Yeah, I really like this part because the diet should give you tools for dealing with triggers. So if you have a food trigger, whether it's emotional eating, whether it's just your love for certain types of food, a diet should have in place for you different ways to deal with certain types of eating so that when you get to that place and you can remain on the diet.
Yeah. What is your favorite diet that you've tried, Drew, other than the keto diet? Because I know that seems to be your favorite right now.
The problem is the word diet, because there's a donut diet, there's a Twinkie diet. You know what I'm saying? It's our perception of the word diet. So for me, I recently have been a big fan of the keto diet. Now, for everybody, I don't think it is for everybody, just like any other diet isn't. There's no one size fits all. But a lot, it's our perception of it. When we think of the word diet, we think short term, what's the quickest way to lose the most amount of weight with the least amount of effort?
Yeah.
Right? That's what we're all looking for, is I want to put in the least amount of effort and lose the most amount of weight. We aren't looking for sustainability when it comes to diet programs, right? We're looking like, okay, I just need to lose this. I got a wedding coming up or a cruise or whatever. So it's our perception of that word diet. I think that is the issue. And so, yes, I do agree with that. The best diet out there is the one you can maintain long term. But that doesn't mean, for example, like I do keto or I do paleo. It doesn't mean I'm not going to eat grains ever again or I'm not going to eat sugar ever again. Mm-hmm. I think there's a need for balance, and I think if you can sustain it 80% of the time, then I think that's something that is a good fit for you instead of being perfect all or nothing all the time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you got to allow yourself.
I agree. Now let's talk about the marijuana diet. Just kidding. Marijuana diet. Our next topic was very interesting. I know in California, marijuana has been legalized, you know, for a while. Yeah. And now after the election, so many other states have been awarded, I guess, legalized marijuana as well.
Yeah, we had 5 states legalized. Mm-hmm. California legalized recreational marijuana. Mm-hmm. And so now it's a big concern. Are there actually health worries to marijuana? Because, you know, the idea is it's generally harmless. Mm-hmm. But they are finding there may be some cardiomyopathy problems, and that's really your heart having weak heart muscles. Mm-hmm. And so they're finding that there may be a correlation between marijuana and weak heart muscles, and that people in this group that they studied, they found that people that smoked marijuana, they had a 2% more of a likelihood to be getting stress-related cardiomyopathy. Mm-hmm. And now it was affecting young males, which is a group this does not typically affect. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's kind of gained a little bit of traction. At the same time, they have admitted to some confounding factors, that the group that smoked marijuana also did illicit drugs, also suffered from depression as well. Yeah. So there's more work to be teased out here, but certainly with it being recreational now, and it's I believe over 20% of people in the country now have access to marijuana, these are things we want to be looking at.
How do you really feel about this study?
I think it's legitimate in the fact that we really haven't studied marijuana the way we should have because we haven't had the opportunity. Yeah. So we don't know what dangers are out there. I generally feel it's a pretty harmless drug, but at the same time, I just don't know.
Yeah. I don't know if both of you, if you've watched the Dr. What is his name? Sanjay Gupta from CNN.
Sanjay.
He had a great documentary on marijuana, and it really showed, especially like a lot of children who suffered from seizures.
Oh, yeah.
They would take whatever ingredient
CBD.
Out of it and give it to the kids, and it was like day and night. Yeah. It really, really helped them. And you know, for me, when I watched that, it really changed my perspective. I saw it as medicine, but what happens when we abuse it? And we're doing it just, you know, for fun. I feel like anything in excess can hurt you.
And the general argument is you can abuse marijuana without too much hurting you.
Yeah.
But I don't think we also know. We haven't had widespread abuse of it, you know. So I think
Studies of that abuse.
Yeah. So when it goes recreational, we'll have some more information. Yeah. But it's doing well in Colorado, doing well in Washington State. So we'll see.
Yeah. So next week we'll have Snoop Dogg on and we'll ask him personally the effects of it. Have you done any studies on marijuana or do you feel
with weight loss even,
Yeah. Drew, do you know any of this or looked into this or heard that it actually can affect the heart muscles and affect young men who abuse it?
I haven't heard that study, but I think I agree with Shaka on this one. I think there's still, it's so new with our studies on what it can do, right? I think there's tremendous benefits, and I think for the most part it's harmless, but at the same time, there's still a lot more research that needs to be done, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But I think the fact that we're open to it being medicine and being being known as this is not that as bad as we were told as kids, like, hey, stay away from this drug. Yeah. It'll do this to you, right? I think the facts are out there that it's, for the most part, safe and helpful for a lot of people. But so I like that we're moving in the right direction, but I think there's still a lot more work that needs to be done.
Yeah, and what was exciting is a couple of years ago, I actually read an article that found marijuana was linked to better cardio vascular function and also lower weight for people that had used it for a long period of time. And so it'll be interesting
really,
to see.
Really, even after getting the munchies.
Yeah, people that used marijuana on average had lower body weights than people that, you know, that had not. And so it'll be interesting to see if there's any fitness effect and if you'll start getting pre-workouts that are infused with this or, you know, protein that's infused with this. Who knows? Yeah,
I can't touch that stuff. I'm staying far away from it. It doesn't sit well with me. But, all right, so now we're going to jump into just, you know, all about you, Drew. We're going to jump right in. You have so much going on. You have your book. You have your podcast. You have your TV show. Is there something in the works that you're not telling us?
There's possibly another book that I'm just in the beginning stages.
Oh, wait, the dad book.
A dad book, yes.
Yes, I did. Yeah, I think I listened to one of your podcasts. And for you guys out there, if you haven't gone over to his Instagram or social media, please do now as we talk and look at his beautiful little girls. I will have to say you are one of very few men who really show how much you adore your children, and that's such a great thing to be able to show off. You know, I feel like a lot of people, especially men, don't do that.
Well, thank you so much, and I appreciate that, Fallon, because I feel like, yeah, I've been through a life transformation over the past couple of years. You know, Fit to Fat to Fit happened about 5 years ago, and it kind of took off and became a successful brand, and then the TV show happened. But personally, I was struggling, and I went through a divorce, and kind of hit rock bottom and had to kind of re-find myself. And it took a while for me to find, you know, who I was and what my role in life was. And so, yeah, being a dad has kind of helped me progress to where I am now as far as learning how to embrace vulnerability, learning how to be a good man and to have a good relationship with myself. And so, yes, I do plan on opening up more about my personal life, which is scary in a way, but at the same time, I think inspiring to a lot of men, because I don't think, like you said, Fallon, there's a lot of men out there that are talking about being vulnerable, being open about being a dad and the importance of that role, especially to daughters, in my opinion. And so, yes, I will open up about that side, because there's a lot more to me than just health and fitness. Mm-hmm. And so I hope to show that here in the next little bit.
I know in one of the episodes, I forget, I think it was JJ's episode, but his client, he wanted to lose weight specifically so that he could adopt and be a great father. How much do you feel like your health and taking care of your health, especially after you gained the weight and then, you know, lost it, how much does that affect you as a father? Do you have that same motivation, like, hey, I need to stay fit for my children? Are you motivating and inspiring them to live healthy, fit lives?
Yes. I feel like being a dad is a very important role, first and foremost. And what I've learned over the years is that there's so much more to our health than us just being skinny or having a six pack, right? And us being an example to our kids is essential, because that's where they learn about health and fitness from, in my opinion, first is from us. So they learn from our examples. But it doesn't mean that you need to look a certain way or weigh a certain weight for your kids to know that you see the value of living a healthy lifestyle. But I do feel it's important for us dads to kind of step up and take that role, because I know society kind of tells oh, we can be this, you know, we can have the dad bod, and that's cool. It's funny, and they get that. But if we're dying of a heart attack at 40, that's not cool. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So we just need to learn how to take care of ourselves and take care of our health. And we understand that we need to make ourselves a priority. Moms included, we sacrifice our health for our kids, thinking I'm selfless because I am not going to the gym. or I'm not spending a lot of time cooking these meals because I want to spend more time with my kids. When in reality, you know, you're not the best version of you when you're not healthy. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah, you're not the happiest version of you when you're not healthy.
And you deprive them of a good example.
Yeah, that's exactly. Makes a lot of sense.
Now, I had a question. So, you know, I found it difficult that Fallon even did Fit to Fat to Fit, but, you know, at least it was a show. Where did you find the courage to do it just on your own in the beginning?
That's a great question. I think it just came from the realization that I could not connect with my clients who were overweight. I could not understand why it was so hard for them just to do what I was telling them. You know, I'm like, it's so easy. You guys just eat healthy, exercise. I don't understand why it's so hard for you guys to, you know, just give up soda and go to the gym when I tell you to. I just had these clients that would just say, you know what, Drew, you don't understand why it's so hard. You've always been in shape. And it just kind of ate at me. And then I was thinking of ideas and the idea popped up in my head. And it's one of those moments in life where you feel like it was like a calling. Like this is inspiration in a way. Like this is something I need to do. Mm. And for whatever reason, that was the feeling I got when I first thought of getting fat on purpose, as crazy as that sounds.
Did you have any moments of doubt or did you, you know, day five, you're like, wait, I got to just lose this weight and get back to being fit?
Oh, yeah. The old me kind of tapped in where I was like freaking out because I used to complain about, you know, getting fat by not going to the gym for 2 days in a row or 3 days or eating too many cheat meals over the weekend. Yeah. I'd be like, oh my gosh, I can't do this. And then, you know, I'm like, I still have 5.5 months left to go. Fallon can relate to this, you know? So it's, yeah, you do kind of freak out. But at the same time, you realize it's not just about you. And I kind of, you know, once you put the word out there, you kind of make yourself accountable to your audience. Mm-hmm. You have to follow through.
Yeah.
So when you were going through this process, were you writing a book in the meantime? Or when did it come to you where you're like, you know what, I should let the world know about this?
No, I did not have an idea to write a book. So I knew I wanted to blog about it and put it up on YouTube, right? So I documented on my website and on YouTube, and that's all I knew how to do. And it just kind of became organic from there. Friends started telling friends and other people, and then fitness bloggers reached out to me and wanted to interview me. And then it just kind of spread from there. Then it showed up on Yahoo one day. And then, boom, that's when I got TV calls from TV shows. And then I got a call from the publisher. They read my blogs. And they said that this would be a good idea for a book. And so the book thing happened about 4 months into my Fit to Fat journey. Oh, okay. And it was just, you know, I had no connections. They reached out to me.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I remember seeing that story. I remember thinking to myself, who's this fool that's doing this? And I thought to myself, well, maybe I could do – no, I can't do that. Yeah. It's impossible. I'm not going to gain weight. What if I don't lose it again? And, you know?
Now, I have a question for you. I never asked you this question before, but I know for me – okay, so did the weight gain, weight loss affect your relationship? I know you openly talked about your divorce. I know for me, I didn't want to admit it during the process, but in hindsight, it really did affect my relationship that I was in. Not so much, I mean, he thought I was beautiful. He would tell me, you know, you're great how you are, but I feel like it kind of brought to the forefront problems that we already had that maybe, you know, I think whenever you're under stress, right, a high amount of stress, if you have problems, they're going to come to the surface. Yeah. So even though me being overweight necessarily didn't cause issues, but the stress I was under gaining the weight and losing the weight drastically affected my relationship. Do you think it affected yours?
Oh, yeah, I can relate to that 100%. And I kind of open up in that in my book about that. And so does my ex-wife, too. She has the chapter in the book, too, where she opens up about our relationship and how we fought more in those 6 months than we did before in our entire marriage. Now, I wouldn't say that it caused us to get divorced, not by any means. If, you know, once I open up about my story, people will know why we got divorced. But It did kind of exacerbate the problems that were already there, you know, underlying problems that we already had. And so when you're when you're going through this fit to fat phase and your hormones start to change,
your personality changes.
You become snappier and like less patience, and you know you're lazy and you're tired all the time, and you're lethargic, and you just, you know, you're moodier. And so, yeah, that causes you to fight with this other person that, you know, maybe if you were healthy, you wouldn't have those same issues. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense.
Complete sense, yeah.
Now, how is it, you know, being on the other side, what was it like for you watching season one and now, you know, as season two is being filmed? How is it seeing all of us, you know, go through that experience? Are you just sitting back laughing?
You gotta be loving it, right?
Or were you surprised by some of the different experiences that we went through?
It's so interesting because I get to relive my experience through you guys. sometimes I forget what it was like, you know. I did mine 5.5 years ago, and sometimes I forget the process. But seeing you guys go through it and seeing how you guys suffer physically, mentally, and emotionally, I start to relive my experience. And it is surprising that it's almost exactly the same for every single trainer, even though there's different twists and turns and they all have their own reactions to it. It's almost the same pattern that we as trainers go through, who are these disciplined, fit, you know, in a way self-obsessed in the beginning and kind of judgmental. They go through this process where they become humbled and they kind of grow through this process. Yes, physically they grow, but emotionally too, and their empathy and their respect for their clients and the understanding that they have of transformation is so much better than what it was before. And so it's really cool to see almost every single trainer who has gone through this process go through the same kind of pattern during Fit to Fat to Fit.
So season two, I know season one, it was kind of like the first season where, you know, you guys showed the world what this process is like. Is there anything that you can tell us about in season two that may be different or...
And they're all together in season two, right?
Are they all together this season?
Yeah, so the format's a little bit different. Season one, the way we had it was each episode was one trainer's journey from Fit to Fat to Fit. Season two, what we're doing is we're bringing all the trainers together, and they're going through the process together at the same time.
So are they all in the house together or?
No, they're not living in a house together, but we bring them together in the beginning, the middle, and the end to kind of do their weigh-ins, right, before, after, and after. So that they can kind of see each other. But what we did is we had them go their first day of Fit to Fat. They all went to the same places together and did their first big cheat meal together, right? So that was kind of cool. They got to experience that. But the thing that's different in season two is that the clients are relatives of the trainers. So instead of a complete stranger, there's a husband-wife duo. There's a sister-sister duo, you know? Other people are like family friends.
Good.
So they're kind of like a family or they're long time like family friends that are like family members. And so it adds a different dynamic, and there's going to be so much more drama because when it's someone you love, it causes so much more real emotion.
It raises the stakes. I can imagine. Because you know that after the cameras turn off, I'm still going to see you.
Very, very interesting.
And it's so weird how the people you love the most, you're the meanest to.
This is true.
And it's so interesting. Whereas when it's a stranger, you're kind of like,
My client was pretty mean to me. I don't
know. Well, I think if it's a stranger, you don't know like their backstory. You know, I don't know if there's something you're not telling me that's making this way more difficult for you. But when it's someone you know, you're like, I know your backstory. You can do this.
Yeah, and you can call them out, and you know, you don't take crap from them, and they don't take crap from you. It just adds so much more real emotion to the story, and so that's what's different about season two. And it's each episode will be a continuation. So you got to tune in each week to see what happens next. Because it's not just one trainer, one episode like it was in season one.
I'm interested in that sister-sister combo because that's you know, she's gaining weight for you to both lose it. That's interesting.
That's going to be good. So when does season two premiere?
Right now we're aiming for spring of 2017, probably April-ish, but we don't have a set date yet.
Okay. Awesome. Now let's talk about your podcast. I am such a big fan. How long have you had this podcast? How did you decide, like, okay, I wrote a book, I did a TV show. What made you want to start a podcast?
So, okay, so I've had the podcast for over a year now, which is crazy because I cannot believe it's been that long. But I started to become a fan of podcasts. Actually, I think I got turned on to the Tim Ferriss Show.
Love that.
And Joe Rogan Experiment. Mm-hmm. And I just started listening to these crazy podcasts. And then I started listening to all these other ones. And I'm like, there is so much information out here that is free that you can have available at the touch of your fingers any time of the day. And I'm like, man, I just haven't tapped into this. Why haven't I done this? And so I became obsessed with listening to all these podcasts. And so you can find out anything. If you have any interest in the world, you could find a podcast on it. So whether that's video games, whether that's Game of Thrones, whether that's health and fitness or religion or history, you can find a podcast on that and learn from experts. And so I started listening to health and fitness podcasts. And I remember I reached out to this guy named Sean Stevenson.
I was looking his the name of his show up. I really, really like his show. And I know you guys, I think you were on his and he was on yours.
Yeah, we've become like best friends now because I reached out to him and he actually responded back out to me. Yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh, this guy's cool. Because I just said, hey man, I love your podcast. And he like reached back out to me and he had me on as a guest. And then we just kind of hit it off.
Yeah.
And he kind of challenged me. He's like, dude, you need to get a podcast. He's like, you have the following. He's like, you got a great voice. You would be good for this. He also said, you have a great face for podcasting. And so I'm like, you know what? I was like, why can't I do it? You know, I was so nervous because I'm like, so many times in life we think, well, this isn't for me. This is what these people do. This is what these experts do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, why not you? Why not now?
Yeah, you're the guy that gained all the weight.
So I decided to do my research, put in the time. But honestly, Sean Stevenson was one of my kind of mentors and kind of talked me into this. And so it's his fault.
And he's a good dad, too. I could see why you guys would get along.
Yeah. Yeah. He's great.
All right, and let's talk about, last thing before we go, your dollar workout club. Really?
Yes.
A dollar can get me a free workout?
Yeah.
Yes, okay, about? So this is really cool. So I started this about a year ago as well. And me and my ex-wife, actually, she's one of my business partners, and Natalie Hodson, who has a large social media following as well. We teamed together, and kind of following the same format of Dollar Shave Club, right? We wanted to create a fitness platform, an online fitness platform that was affordable but super high quality and for a cheaper price. So we decided to call it Dollar Workout Club, where people can stream online workout videos, you know, to their smartphone, their computer, their laptop, their iPads, and they could do these workouts from home. Minimal equipment, 8 to 20 minutes long each workout at beginner, intermediate, and advanced fitness levels.
Oh, wow.
All for a dollar a week. And so they get access each week for a dollar, 5 new workout videos, 5 healthy recipe videos, and 5 motivational videos. New content delivered every single week for just about $1 a week. And that's why we call it Dollar Workout Club.
That's awesome. Oh,
$4 a month, too high. Sorry.
Wow, that's no, that's awesome. Yeah. You definitely found something there. I feel like, you know, I'll pay $10 for a great, you know, app on my iPhone. You know, I definitely would purchase $4. And I mean, you guys are all experts. You know what you're doing. You know, we've seen you do it. So that's awesome that you're willing to give out your services for that amount.
Yeah. And there's Daily Burn, there's Beachbody, there's a lot of competitors, and your average is somewhere between $10 to $15 a month,
mm-hmm.
you know, for access to these kinds of things. And we just feel like there's, you know, it doesn't need to be that expensive.
At all. I agree.
Well, we appreciate you coming on here. Please think of me for your next big idea, your next,
Are you sure about that?
Yes. As long as I don't have to gain weight again, I am good.
Okay.
Well, thanks again. I'm so looking forward to season 2 and everything else that you have, you know, in the works. Again, where can our following find you?
Yeah, so all my whole brand is Fit to Fat to Fit with the number 2. So fit2fat2fit.com. So my book is Fit to Fat to Fit. My podcast is Fit to Fat to Fit. My Instagram, Facebook, Twitter is all at Fit to Fat to Fit.
Do people like forget your name? They just think, oh, that's the Fit to Fat guy.
Nobody knows my name.
That's so funny. Drew Manning.
Thank you so much for joining us.
We appreciate you guys watching. Same time, same place next week. I'm your host, Fallon Mercedes. You guys can find me online at fitwithfallon.com. And where can they find you, Shaka?
You can find me online at Shaka Strong on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat.
All right, you guys, stay healthy. We'll see you next week.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagramming at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.